Guys, it's almost May, and that means graduations, job interviews, and dressing for work. That's why we love the folks at Liberty Shirt Co. Not only do they make the coziest, warmest, and softest flannels we love to wear, but they have over 400 fabrics for you to design your one-of-a-kind shirt for every occasion, like white shirts for job interviews to the coolest linen for summer clubbing down the shore. And what's really awesome about these guys is that they make every shirt in New Jersey. Head over to libertyshirtco.com and save every time you use the promo code 3PEAT.
Welcome back to another episode of the 3PEAT podcast, season 3, episode 11. We just keep putting these out for you guys, and it's something we really do enjoy. I'm your host, Alex Castle, and I'm joined by
Stephen Benazzo
and Josh Bromowitz.
We got a lot of great stuff to talk about today. As always, we're going to talk about March Madness, our Hawks making history. We'll go over our predictions. We're going to talk about the NFL, get into free agency, the winners and losers so far, talk about our teams, and talk about who's been left to sign, who's yet to sign, where are they going to go. And we're going to finish up with talking some puck. But first, before we begin the show, the 3-peat would just like to extend our condolences to former NBA center Sean Bradley. He was recently hit by a car while riding his bike that has now left him paralyzed. Fortunately, he is going into rehab. He's going to be getting the best help that he needs. Sean, we hope for a speedy recovery, and we hope that you could get back on those big legs of yours one day. Now getting into NCAA. Gentlemen, we did it. The Hawks did it. We're dancing into March Madness. What an incredible game it was. I mean, it was such an exciting thing to see. I was honored to be watching it with Josh. Steve, I know you were with your family, so I'm sure you got to enjoy it with them. It just a great experience just to see the school all coming together like this, see the reaction from alumni, professors, the list goes on and on. So, Josh, we'll start off with you. Aside from the Hawks obviously making history, they're going up against the number one seed Baylor this Friday, 3 p.m., what are some of the takeaways from this game that you saw from the team that you liked? And do you see any major concerns going into this game?
So first, obviously, a huge shout out to Coach Gallagher and the rest of the men's basketball team. History was made this past Friday. A lot of emotions have been expressed from players, alumni, coaches, teachers, whatever. The list goes on and even ends with us. Very emotional for all of us. Tears of excitement, and it was incredible. But some takeaways from the game, the Hawks did what they did best, and it was winning on the defensive end and then getting out in transition. And that's what we saw. Defense wins championships is something that we're taught as kids in the early stages of basketball. And we saw Tracy Carter being Tracy Carter, racking up them steals, getting Austin Williams out in transition for easy dunks and layups. But you mentioned that they're playing the number one seed Baylor, who is the number one shooting three-point shooting team in the country. Hartford is a below-average three-point shooting team themselves. They shoot basically like 30% from the field. But a positive is that they are a top 10 in the three-point shooting defense in the country, holding opponents to under 30% as well. So if you enjoy high explosive offenses in March Madness, then this game won't be for you. So I don't expect either team to be in the 90s like you see Gonzaga doing on a constant basis. But I think this will be one of those slugfests that really test your enjoyment of the sport if you like seeing great play on both ends of the floor.
Absolutely. And like you said, not going to be a high-scoring game, but it will be a defensive game. And I think that'll put our Hawks to the test. As you said, defense wins championships. Steve, I know that you were one of the few people that has been following this team to the end. They did it. They won the championship. What are your initial takes on what the Hawks did against UMass Lowell?
It was awesome. I had a good feeling that they would be able to do it. I didn't want to just automatically assume that they would win, but like we talked about, they're so good at home. They had a lot of – they're on that win streak. So, and then they did it, which was just awesome to see. Saturday was a great day to be a Hartford Hawk. And Castle, kind of like what you said, it was so awesome just seeing alumni and everyone just reach out on social media, so proud of Hartford. And not even the alumni, but even ESPN guy Scott Van Pelt with wrote a message, Steve Levy, you know, because they even were saying like where Hartford is kind of like ESPN's team. ESPN's their headquarters, or one of their headquarters is in Bristol, and we're right here in Hartford, so it's close. And for the first time ever, I mean, so many people were super excited, and a lot of people are kind of on our side. Everyone's starting to become more familiar with John Gallagher. Obviously, we've already been familiar with him, so he knows the energy, the passion, the love he has for the school and the program. But now people are starting to see on a national level, the school, you know, the program's getting national recognition. They're going to have a tough matchup. Baylor is not a pushover at all. Not only are they a number one seed, but they are one of the best teams in the country. But listen, and even actually I listened to one of Tracy Carter's sound bites that the school posted. And he was saying, you know, they lace up their shoes the same way we do. They dribble basketball the same way we do. They do, you know, they're still people too. They're still the same athletes. Both of these teams are Division I schools. So, yes, Baylor may play on a bigger stage. They may play more highly recruited competition, if you want to call it. But our guys are still Division I basketball players. Our guys still made the tournament just like Baylor did. So they just can't go into the game fearing because it's Baylor. They got to go in knowing that there is a chance this March anything can happen. And it's one game. It's not like they have to play a seven-game series like the NBA playoffs. They just have to play better than Baylor for one game. And I'm not saying that could happen, but it's something that Hartford needs to bring with them and have that attitude. And I'm excited whether it's a blowout, whether they somehow pull off the upset. Either way, it's an exciting time to be able to watch the Hawks make the tournament because it's not easy, like we know, and who knows the next time when they'll be able to. Hopefully, we'd hope that they can now continue to make deep pushes and be able to stay on top of the conference and try to make it in, year out. But it's a tough, tough task to do.
I think in order for us to have a chance, it really comes down to how well we shoot the ball from deep, because our defense will only be able to hold up as much if our offense can score on that end. Because if we're not scoring points, our defense won't be able to hold up will only be able to hold up for so long. That goes with any sport. So guys like Hunter Marks, DJ Mitchell, who really didn't have great games in the championship. I know, Alex, when we were talking, you weren't very impressed with Mitchell airballing threes, breaking layups. So we really can't see any of that. It can't really be the weight on Tracy Carter and Austin Williams like it was the entire playoffs, but it really needs to be a full team effort where we have multiple guys scoring 10-plus points.
And obviously, I think Hartford, well, both teams in that championship game in that first half, the score was like 23-18 at half. Each team was shooting like 6-23 or 6. Like, it was poor shooting. And, you know, it didn't impact them that game because both teams are shooting poorly. But Baylor, you know, chances are if they shoot like that to start the game, that they're going to stand no chance, because chances are Baylor may shoot poorly than they usually do, but they probably won't shoot that bad. And thing is too, like, Hartford is definitely one of the biggest teams in the America East, so that fares well against America East. But Baylor's also big now. So our big men have to play – well, not just our big men, everyone, but, like, especially our big men, they can't be soft. They have to finish tough. They have to really use their size to their advantage and not let them outpower and outmuscle them in the paint or just, you know, the entire game. So – but it's going to be an interesting game. It's going to be fun to watch regardless.
I know people look at it as a 16 seed versus a 1 seed, and people may not be intrigued. But the matchup of Jared Butler versus Tracy Carter will be one of the best that you'll see in college basketball all year. Tracy Carter's averaging 2.6 steals a game, and Jared Butler's a Naismith Player of the Year candidate. It doesn't get any better than that. You have someone who's ranked in the top 10 in defense efficiency, and all the stats back that up. And Jared Butler is one of the most explosive scorers in the country. Shooting efficiency is very high. So Baylor, who relies on their guards, Hartford, who's a very guard-dominant team with on both ends of the floor. So I think matchup-wise, it'll be pretty even. But skill-wise, it really depends on who need guys to step up on off the bench and the rest of the starters who aren't named Tracy and Austin.
Absolutely. And, you know, we keep talking about Tracy Carter. Steve, that soundbite that you brought up, I have to go back and listen to that. But I think that it's so critical for this Hawks team to have a guy like Tracy Carter who has that mentality. I mean, the fact that he's saying, yeah, Baylor's the number one team, but they bounce the balls the same way we do. They lace up and get on the court the same way we do. That's what you need going into a game like this when you're making history. And I think that that's the mentality that Coach John Gallagher continues to instill in these old players, these young players. It doesn't matter. And I think that's going to play a bigger role into this game than we think. Like I said, tune in 3 o'clock, Baylor, Hartford. Whether it's a high-scoring game or not, it's going to be history in the making for sure.
I don't mean to be this guy, but I think it's 3:30 Friday.
Oh, 3:30. Okay, yeah. Thank you for clarifying.
On True TV.
3:30. On True TV, 3:30 on True TV. We have our True TV analyst, Stephen Bonazzo, so thank you for that.
Well, I'm usually on that channel a lot watching Impractical Jokers, so that would be perfect.
Oh, it's a great show. It's a great show. They actually, I know they've shot in both me and Josh's towns, so great show. But sticking on the topic of March Madness, we all made our brackets. So I want to hear who you guys have winning it all, and give me one big upset that people might not expect to happen. Josh, we'll start with you on this one. Who do you have winning for your bracket, and who's one upset that you put that not a lot of people might back up?
So I really like, I know they're a one seed, and I tried staying away from one seeds, but I'm rocking with Illinois winning it all this year. It's been a long time coming for the Fighting Illini. They haven't been relevant since Darren Williams was a member of the team. So that was middle 2000s. But what they have in Ayo Dosunmu and Kofi Coburn is incredible. They have the best 1-2 combo, in my opinion, in all of college basketball. I don't see Baylor. I don't see Gonzaga. I can see Gonzaga going far. I don't see Michigan going too far. But Illinois, I see making a deep run. And as far as upsets, I'm seeing a lot of people who favorite Ohio beating Virginia because Virginia has an outbreak, and it's still to be determined what players will be missing in the tournament. But I'm going to go with, let's see. I just need to pull up the app real quick. There it is. Let's see. Where was my upset? Oh, there it is. I have Georgetown beating Colorado. Patrick Ewing has this team playing hard at the right time. They obviously just won the Big East Championship, and they're getting hot. Just similar to Hartford, they're hot at the right time. And I have them actually advancing all the way to the Sweet 16, beating Colorado in the first round, and then in the later round, beating Florida State. So Georgetown is known for making deep runs, and it's shocking that this year we see them as a 12 seed. But I think this is the year they make a deep run, even if they're a high seed.
Josh, what did you look at my bracket?
Hey, I guess great minds think alike.
Yeah, because I also predicted – I actually had all ones in my Final Four, which kind of like you said, I didn't necessarily want to have, but it just kind of ended up working out that way. So I had Gonzaga, Michigan, Baylor, and Illinois, and I had Illinois, Gonzaga, and the national championship with Illinois winning. Like you said, Ayo Dosunmu, I'm sorry, I'm just going to call him Ayo, number 11 for Illinois. That kid is a monster. And now he's got the face mask.
He automatically plays better now that he's wearing a mask.
Yep. And not a COVID, like, nursing, you know, mask, but a face mask for, like, and I forgot, what did he, like?
A Batman mask.
Yeah.
A broken nose.
So we saw what LeBron, Embiid, Kyrie, all those guys did, Harden, when they had the mask. So
Kobe,
obviously. So he's going to go off. But they've just been playing well all year. And that and Kofi, they were saying in the ESPN tournament challenge app, when you clicked on the info, they were saying he was like the closest thing to a Shaq in recent college basketball memory. So, and if you watched basketball when Shaq was playing, you know how much of a beast he was. So I know, and like Josh said, I think it's been a long time coming. I just like this Illinois team. I watched them quite a bit this year just because I like watching Big Ten basketball. So they're legit. And then the upsets, I agree with Josh with Georgetown, but I'll pick some new ones. So I had a lot of 12-5. So I had Winthrop beating Nova. Nova's missing like two of their best players, or like their two best players. Giuseppe, I know, is like out for the whole tournament. So, and then Winthrop's like 23-1, and they have like a 6'7" point guard, Chandler Bodrin, and then they have 6'9" DJ Burns, who was a former Tennessee recruit. So like they got some good guys, it seems like. I haven't watched too much of them because they're not on TV, but and also have Utah State beating Texas Tech. Now, a lot of people might like Texas Tech because of the run they made a few years ago. They made it to the national championship, lost to Virginia. Now they got Mac McClung.
Yeah, that was my only reason that I'm going Texas Tech. It's hard to bet against Mac McClung and the run he's had this year.
But Utah State, I was reading, they have a 7-foot kid who averages a double-double. And they just, I guess they're a very good defensive team. And then, you know, they're 20-8, so they have a good record. And I think I read an article about them somewhere saying how like very underrated they are. So, I like them a lot. And then this one was kind of, you know, it was a lot of tough matchups this year to pick. I also picked Syracuse going to like, I believe the Sweet 16, but I realized Houston has a very easy path to like the Elite Eight. So I expect them to go far. And I know, I'm sorry, I keep going on and on, but I did pick one playing game, one like the first four. So like I had the winner of Michigan State, UCLA upsetting BYU. I think both those teams could defeat BYU. Like I said, it's tough with some of these out West teams because they play late. So, you know, for the East Coast time. So I'm either like sleeping when they're playing, or they're just not televised as much. So I watch more Michigan State, I know UCLA is out West, but like they're more of a nationally recognized team than BYU is. So I know I see one of them, whoever wins that game, upsetting BYU. So I have a lot of 12-5s, but I think Illinois is going to pull through. How about you, Castle?
Well, I feel like the odd man out because both of you guys of Illinois. I'm going with Maryland to win it all. Might be a little bit of a long shot, but I really like Maryland. I've liked their program the past few years. I really like that game against Michigan. I think they got a good shot. Steve, I also have to agree with you. I have Syracuse going to the Sweet 16 as well. Maybe it's because my uncle went there and I've always rooted for Syracuse. I don't know, but I've always liked to watch Syracuse basketball. So I agree with that. My biggest upset that I have in the first round is I have Iowa losing to Grand Canyon. Don't ask me why, but I just do. I got a funny feeling about it. I've been successful with some brackets before. So that's what my gut's telling me. Josh, you have a counteract statement to that?
I'm just questioning both of you. Steve, as a Connecticut resident, you have UConn losing in the first round.
No, I don't.
UConn plays Maryland.
Yeah, I have UConn winning.
Oh, okay.
I have UConn actually beating Maryland and then Alabama and then maybe beating.
Okay, so it was just Castle then.
Yeah, I'll trust. No, I got my boys. I did pick Hartford to lose because that one's tough, but like.
I have multiple. I have Hartford winning in one of them.
Yeah, I feel like it was one of those things. And I have a friend that goes to Baylor, so I wasn't going to pick Baylor over my school, but I feel like it's one of those things where it's a first round. It's a first round. Yeah, they're the 16th seed, but, you know, I feel like sometimes with these brackets, you just got to say screw it and go for the long shot.
Well, here's the thing. Because remember UMBC when they defeated Virginia and how many brackets they screwed over? Because Virginia was like the number one overall seed of the entire tournament. And a lot of people picked them to win. And the first night they got bounced. Listen, I have Baylor to the Final Four. And a lot of people probably have Baylor to the Final Four championship, maybe even winning. So if Hartford does win and they screw up my bracket, I'll be okay with it just because it's Hartford. But besides that, if any other one seed loses that I have going far, I'm going to be really pissed and not happy. Because obviously I want to win and get some money and
so me and Castle,
say my bracket was good.
Next week, if it happens, me and Castle will be a part of that 1% that picked Hartford. We'll be popping bottles on the next show.
Yeah, funny.
Absolutely.
Except I still can't believe he has UConn losing. James Booknight's going to go crazy once he listens to the show.
Listen, I'm not totally sleeping on UConn. Like I said, when it comes to me making these brackets, it's how I feel, and I'm feeling the Terps to go all the way.
That is just it's a ballsy pick though. Like I could see them maybe making a run, but just winning the entire thing. Like Castle, good for you for sticking behind them. But like that is, I was actually shocked when you said Maryland. I was thinking, you know, maybe you say Gonzaga. Or even like a 2 or even like a 3 seed, maybe 4. But I was not expecting a 10 seed. That like shocked me.
I was about to do Gonzaga actually, but they screwed me over 2 years ago. So I'm like, I'm not going to go 0-2 with that.
He holds grudges when he picks them.
I do. When it comes to making my brackets, it's very specific. But.
Well, UConn always makes it tough for me because as we've seen, they have made, well, not made, but they've won the entire thing before. So each year that they're in, it's tough because I want to pick them because I'm like, oh, they can always get that magic again where they just go on that incredible run like they did in 2011? So now in the years past, like after they made it, after Kemba and Shabazz and those teams, they didn't have a guy. But like this year they have like a guy, like Booknight is one of the best players in the country. RJ Cole is a solid guy. And then they have solid pieces all around. So, like, this UConn team could legitimately be a dark horse to go far in this tournament. So, that's why I picked them going pretty far, but not to win. Because I know that sometimes UConn does not play their best basketball game. And it can, you know, will cost them. So, I have the native team going pretty far, but not all the way.
I totally feel that. I got Rutgers going semi-far. They're the state school. So I get it. And listen, I've heard a lot of good things about UConn. I hope it doesn't come back to bite me in the ass. But like I said, when I make these brackets, I go with that gut feeling.
That's why I got to go represent Iona winning the first round.
Absolutely.
Rick Pitino, huh?
Oh, yeah.
It's so weird to, after everything that happened with him in Louisville, it's so weird to see him in the tournament again, coaching a different team. But hey, listen, the beauty of sports is that unless something really, really bad happens to one of these coaches or players that sidelines them for the rest of their career, the beauty of it is anything can happen. I mean, I remember when all this stuff came out with Pitino, it was bad. I mean, there were some people saying that he might not even coach again. And the fact that he's now made it to the tournament, with a program that doesn't have nearly the same recognition as Louisville, it's definitely impressive. So we got to see how this tournament plays out. It's going to be a very exciting March Madness. We're going to keep going over these games next week, and good luck to the Hawks. We're cheering for you boys. Get that win in Indy. Now we got to move on to football. Football, this free agency has been something else so far. I'm very happy with what my Giants did. We got the big cat, 3 years, $63 million, 45 guaranteed. Very happy about that. Not happy about Dalvin Tomlinson, though. I was very upset with that. I mean, you know, he's a solid nose tackle. He was a defensive captain, and he really represented what the Giants were. Now he's playing for Minnesota, 2 year, $22 million contract. It hurts. And Steve, I'm sure as a Bears fan, you're not happy about that. So, and we'll get into that a little bit later. Giants also acquired Mike Glennon as our backup, which don't really know what the thought process was going into that one, but I guess we'll have to see how that plays out. I mean, listen, he's a backup for Jones. He's got experience. So it's something. But the last move that the Giants need to make, we need to sign Kenny Golladay. Gettleman, you do not let him leave the room until he inks the deal. Right now it's between us and Cincinnati, but it's been clear that he wants to play for New York. So we got to get it done. There are Giants players in the locker room that said that Kenny Golladay is the guy that we need. So get it done. Get it done. Now we're going to go to your boys' teams, but I want to start off with you, Steve. Andy Dalton. I don't understand how you add another guy like Dalton. I mean, listen, I'm not gonna shit on Dalton. He impressed me some of the games that he played for Dallas. But what's that process going into that, Steve? Like,
wait, did you say you were impressed by Andy Dalton in Dallas?
Yes, and here's why.
What games were you watching?
Listen. I'm impressed in the sense that he was able to make some of that offense still work. I mean, this team was crap.
Look at the talent he had. I completely disagree with you.
Well,
surrounded. Look at his receivers. When you have three wide receivers named Michael Gallup, CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, a running back named Ezekiel Elliott, your tight ends are pretty decent, and you're a below-average football team. I get your defense is horrendous, but you would expect the offense to do something.
I don't blame him for that. I blame Mike McCarthy.
Pick a punter at quarterback and be successful for all I ask.
I mean,
it was awful. Sorry, but it was a terrible move.
Listen, just before we get to Steve, that's a very fair point, Josh, but I don't blame him. I look at what Dallas did all around, and I solely blame Mike McCarthy for that. Solely blame Mike McCarthy. I do think Andy Dalton still has some gas left in the tank. And yeah, Maybe it wasn't in the sense of he's putting up these ridiculous numbers every game. No, of course not. But there were some plays that I saw that I think that he could still play a role for a team. But obviously, bringing him to Chicago is where I scratch my head. So, Steve, we finally get to you now. What's going on with this deal?
Well, here's the thing. Kind of to piggyback off that, not saying I love the sounding of Andy Dalton. I would have much rather see, the Bears acquired Russell Wilson in exchange for blah, 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 or the Bears acquired Deshaun Watson for blah, blah, blah. But yes, you could say he has all those weapons, but one, Zeke was not the same back he's been the past couple years. He actually just sucked this year. He fumbled the ball. He looked like he was so out of shape. He did not look like a top tiered running back. And then their line was never consistently healthy. You know, certain guys were injured and stuff like that. And then Andy Dalton actually had a concussion from the Redskins game. He also had COVID. So who knows what kind of effects that was having on him. But he did keep them competitive. He didn't put up like insane numbers, or he may not have won a lot of games, but he kept them competitive. The game where Ben DiNucci started against Philly on Sunday Night Football, Philly absolutely toasted the Cowboys. They dominated them. And Philly did not really do that all year. Philly was actually the team getting that done too a lot of the times. So I'd say, yes, he wasn't, you know, I mean, but he wasn't brought in to be their guy. He was brought in to back up Dak Prescott, which he ended up having to do because Dak Prescott got hurt. And kind of like we said, once Dak got hurt, it really just threw off the not emotions of the team, but like the...
It threw off the mojo of the team, yes, a little bit.
Yes, exactly. But then back to the signing. Here's the thing. I got to give credit to Ryan Pace. He supposedly offered 3 first-round picks, a couple out of like second-round or mid-picks, and then 2 defensive starters. I doubt it was Khalil Mack or Eddie Jackson or even Roquan. It was probably more like Kyle Fuller and maybe Akeem Hicks. Maybe Robert Quinn. But he made his effort, you know? And that was, I'm sure he would have made more offers, but the Seahawks said no. And listen, here's the thing. Just because you make an offer doesn't mean that team has to accept it. The Seahawks, Russell Wilson's under contract with Seattle. Seattle does not have to trade him. Same thing to Deshaun Watson. The Texans don't have to trade him. So even if maybe they're like, I want to play somewhere else, that team does not have to get rid of them. So the Bears, and then if you look at all the guys that are left, you know, and then Dak got re-signed. So there was no one else that was really good on the market. It didn't matter if the Bears signed Andy Dalton, Alex Smith, Jameis Winston. I don't know. You could say he might have been better, but the dude also threw 30 picks in one season. That's a lot of turnovers. So, you know, what's the difference between going 3 now and then just throwing a turnover almost every other play? So pretty much it didn't matter who the Bears got. It wasn't going to be someone good because there's no one. The only way they acquire a good quarterback was through trade. And the Raiders said that they weren't going to trade Derek Carr. Stafford already got traded. And the Lions weren't going to trade Stafford to the Bears in general. So, yes, obviously I didn't want to see the Bears just going from, you know, they're saying they're supposed to, you know, be aggressive, big players in the quarterback market and end up with Dalton. Yes, Dalton's obviously not going to carry us to the Super Bowl. But to be honest, who else are we going to, I'd rather have Dalton than say, I don't even know, one of these third string guys because they waited too long to try to get one of these big time guys. And then these teams were just not going to get rid of their franchise quarterbacks. So yes, it sucks, but people got to realize like, it's not as easy as they think. Just like, you know, the Seahawks are not just like dangling Russell Wilson. All right, who wants him? I mean, it's Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson said he doesn't want to play for the Texans, but why the Texans going to give up on a superstar franchise quarterback? Because then they're going to be in the same hole trying to find their next one. And we saw it a couple years ago when the Bears signed Mike Glennon and then ended up trading up and drafting Mitch. The Bears could try to trade up and draft a quarterback, and you know, whether it's like a Trey Lance, I doubt they'll try to jump to like pick number 6, but they might try to get a guy like Trey Lance. So obviously it's not the best signing, but at this point it's a 1-year deal. People are acting like it's a 5-year, $140 million deal. So it's kind of, at this point, it's just like, what else were they really supposed to do? You know, it doesn't really help that Allen Robinson situation. So the Bears are in a tough spot, but at this point, it's kind of like, it is what it is. I'd rather, I guess, maybe have Andy Dalton than say, I'm trying to think of other free agent quarterbacks that are like third stringers than them trying to lead the team. At least Andy Dalton has starting experience. He's a 3-time Pro Bowler. You know, it's not like the dude is a complete nobody. So I don't know. That's why I got to offer.
Steve, it's a shame that you're so loyal because this is a terrible move for your team. And I'll tell you why. What is the difference between Andy Dalton and Mitch Trubisky, in all honesty?
I don't know. The only way the Bears...
If you look at stats-wise, they're completely identical.
But here's the thing. Sometimes the stats are... Because we saw how Mitch plays against good teams. He can't play against them. It's all against the bad teams.
Right, okay. And the same could be said about Andy Dalton.
But Andy Dalton, though, has thrown for over 4,000 yards. He's played the Steelers many times before. He's played tough teams and has put up 4,000 yards, 30 touchdowns in season. Mitch has never done that. Mitch against Green Bay shits the bed every time. Mitch against the Saints shits the bed every time. We put up 9 points. Really, we put up 3 points in that playoff game, and we could barely move the ball. I think Dalton could move the ball a little bit better. I don't know. I'm not saying Dalton's going to put up 45 touchdowns, but I think he might be able to move the ball a little bit better. Trubisky is very athletic, so that helps him, but he just, his mental aspect of it is kind of like, he just, I don't know, it's tough for him. And then like Nagy, obviously, I don't think was the right fit for Mitch. So maybe Mitch will do better in it where coach schemes more for Mitch. But I just, sometimes the stats are, oh my gosh, I'm blinking again.
Stats aren't always what they show to be.
Yes.
I get that. But then going off that, then what you're saying is then Nick Foles should have been better than what he really is. But that's also not true.
But Nick Foles also hasn't really started a full season either.
Okay. So, but he got it done when it mattered most, essentially.
Yes. But then, you know, this year. But then, like, he was coming off Jacksonville, which that didn't work out. And then even this, like, clearly there's something, you know, I think Nagy, he's got to stop letting his ego and what he, like, he's got to, like I've said in past episodes, he has to scheme towards his players and not what he thinks works, because clearly it doesn't work. Maybe it works for Kansas City, but it doesn't work in Chicago. Like I said, at least Andy Dalton has started full seasons for many. I mean, he was a Bengals guy for many years. But back to my point, I'd rather have Andy Dalton than Geno Smith, than Brett Hundley, Sean Mannion, you know, and even like, I don't know, a guy like, I mean, Fitzpatrick might have not been bad, but what, I mean, yes, Fitzpatrick, like,
what about a guy named Sam Darnold? I know a thing about him. Jets are trying to trade him.
Well, who knows? It doesn't mean that the Bears are out of it, but they wanted to make sure they got a guy. You know, just so if Casey wouldn't, because then the Bears, I don't know, what if the Jets decide to keep Darnold?
Very unlikely at this point.
It is very unlikely, but you just don't know these things. And then there's so, it's not like the Bears would be the only team, you know, there's other teams that could possibly offer more. So it was kind of just a safer option, I think, for the Bears. Again, am I screaming, oh, I love the signing of Andy Dalton to the Bears? Of course not. No, I'm, you know, still mad. I'm irritated. But I don't know. I guess maybe I could see the other side to it. Well, other people can, because other people just expected the Bears to get Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson because they needed a quarterback, and there were some rumors that they could be traded.
Oh,
that's not how it works.
I get that part. But I still would be pissed off about this if I were in your shoes. Look, I agree. I wouldn't expect to have Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson, but there are plenty of quarterbacks still available that you could at least make a better attempt. You could trade up with someone in the top 10 and draft someone, because there's five quarterbacks that will probably go in the top 10. There's Sam Darnold, who's available. There's all these quarterbacks who you don't need to sign in free agency, but to give 10 mil to Andy Dalton, and if you're saying you're hoping he's a backup, why do you give 10 mil to him?
I don't know. I don't get the contract.
You have like you get a veteran's minimum to a backup, and I get that. And that would be okay.
And yes, I think that he should have gotten no more than $5 million. $10 million is a little unreal. But like I'm saying, just because they signed him doesn't mean it's necessarily like they're done looking at quarterbacks, because Nagy and Pace kind of realize that their job is still on the line. So they can still try out and try to acquire Darnold, or so. I mean, the draft hasn't happened yet, so we don't know if the Bears are going to trade up and get one. And so we won't find out until whenever the draft is. So I think just because they signed him doesn't mean that's it. And they might move on from Foles, because I think I was seeing Foles has like a guaranteed, you know, amount until a certain date. So if they move him before that date, they wouldn't have to like pay him that, and the other team would have to. So who knows what could happen, but I think they'd feel a little more comfortable with having Dalton than saying a guy who has never like played before and who's been typically a third string backup trying to be the starter. So I could see the point there. Again, still not the best move, but really I think the Bears won't get a franchise guy until we draft and hit on one. And hopefully that would be soon, because I can't keep dealing with this.
Yeah, but especially if you're trying to keep Allen Robinson, you just franchise tag. He doesn't need to sign it. So essentially, he doesn't need to play this year if he doesn't sign it. So I think if you're the Bears, you make a better attempt to get someone who's not a backup to entice your star receiver to stay, because signing Andy Dalton and giving 10 mil is a great way to say, hey, you played your last down in Chicago, and we've accepted that, because I don't really see too many teams wanting to take on a 10 mil Andy Dalton contract. If it was like 1 or 2 mil or even less than 5 mil, like you said, Steve, then okay, fine, if you're trying to move him. But signing him 10 mil is unrealistic for teams, because they're teams who have very little salary to work with. So yeah, that's my thoughts. Sorry, Steve.
Who knew Dalton would be such a hot topic for us, but definitely was an interesting move to say the least. I hope that the Bears do end up going through with Allen Robinson. I think he's a piece that you guys need. And like you said, Steve, I don't think you guys will see another franchise player until you sign or draft someone. So we'll see. But moving on to the other team in New York, the Jets. Josh, I have to say that Corey Davis signing was impressive. I think you're adding another weapon to whatever quarterback you end up sticking with, whether it's Sam Darnold or drafting Zach Wilson at number two. I was happy with that. What else have you seen from your team that you like? And is there anyone that you think that the Jets have missed on, or that you think that they could still pursue? Where do you see this free agency heading at this point?
So first I want to talk about the Corey Davis signing. That was exactly what the Jets needed. Joe Douglas is doing a great job so far this offseason. Corey Davis from the Titans arguably could be a true number one target that we've been looking for. You pair him with Crowder in the slot and Denzel Mims on the other outside. It's a beautiful combo for a quarterback, whether it's Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, or Sam Darnold if he does stay. But I think the Jets are still – there's still more work to be done when it in the skill position fields. I've seen a lot of rumors about us signing Juju Smith. I'm a little mixed on that, because he's a very great talent. But his presence in the locker room is not really what the Jets team needs. We're a young team. We're rebuilding, but we're trying to build something. And I don't really know if he is a part of that. There's other receivers. If we want another receiver like Will Fuller or Kenny Galladay, that I would much rather like. But if we end up with him and for the right price, then fine, so be it. But another move I want to talk about that we signed that I was blown away by, because I didn't even know we were interested in him, was Carl Lawson from the Bengals. Brings a great linebacker presence to a weakened position that we haven't really had a significant pass rush ever. Well, not ever, but in a while. So yeah, we need someone to get to the quarterback, and that's exactly what he does. So I'm very excited for that. And in a Robert Saleh coach team, I'm excited to see what that looks like next year.
I agree. Jets have, I believe, the most money to work with in the league, if not one of the tops. So definitely want to continue to see what they do. I 100% agree with you about Juju, Josh. He's a great talent, but if the Giants were pursuing him, I'd have very similar concerns. Bringing a young guy like him with his personality into New York, I think that's kind of the struggles that I saw with Odell. So we got to see. I mean, if you add him, then you have a very good receiving core to go up against teams like the Patriots, for example, who I want to kind of talk about a little bit. Bill's spending some big money. Hunter Henry, Kendrick Bourne, Nelson Aguilar. They got that other tight end from the –
Jonnu Smith.
Yeah, Jonnu Smith. I mean –
Matthew Judon?
They're – Jalen Mills. I mean, they're really going all out spending this money. It's kind of interesting to see how they're investing so much into this offense around Cam Newton when a lot of people weren't even sure he was going to come back, but he's coming back on a one-year deal. Do you think that the Patriots are making these moves because of the threat that you present, Josh, with the Jets? Or what do you see with all these moves that they're doing? And I would just like to quickly add, Hunter Henry, who previously was with the Chargers, now with the Patriots. The Chargers just signed tight end Jared Cook to a one-year deal, so we could touch upon that in a little bit. But Josh, do you see any red flags with all these deals that they've been making?
Oh, all of it is red flags to me. As a Jet fan, I'm really not too nervous about them. Look, Jonnu Smith is a great tight end. Hunter Henry is a great tight end. I don't really see what their position is. They made all of these moves in the first 24 hours of free agency, I guess, so they could claim guys. Okay, great, but they're overpaying some of these guys. Matthew Judon is past his prime. Bringing back Kyle Van Noy on a cheap deal, okay, that's a good move. Jalen Mills really hasn't been relevant since the Eagles won a Super Bowl, and he wasn't really that much of a factor. He was like a third-string corner, I believe. Kendrick Bourne, another backup receiver. So these moves really don't scare me. I think it's more out of a Patriots, like Bill Belichick doing it out of fear because of the Bills, the Dolphins, the Jets. Got to compete with teams like the Ravens, the Chiefs, all the Browns, the Titans. So as a Jet fan, I really don't care what about these moves, because I really don't see anything too worrisome in it, because Cam Newton is still a running quarterback who looks to run first. He really doesn't have strong receivers. He has two tight ends who are both vertical threats, don't get me wrong, but that's it. They're not blocking tight ends. There's one ball that goes around, so I don't really know how that'll work out. I don't see it being a Gronk and Aaron Hernandez situation.
So, oh, not at all. Not at all.
I really don't see how this should worry me as a Jet fan.
I agree. And you brought up the other two teams in your division, the Dolphins and the Bills. The Bills just getting Emmanuel Sanders, which is very scary for Josh.
That is worrisome for me.
Yeah, that is very scary.
For him with Cole Beasley and Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen, if he could repeat what he did last year.
Very scary.
Very scary. That for sure is a red flag for me as a Jet fan, because our secondary isn't that great. But it's tough covering Stephon Diggs alone. But then you got to worry about Cole Beasley, who put up, I think, 1,000 yards as well last year. And Emmanuel Sanders, who has before. Yikes.
Yeah. Yikes indeed. Steve, let's go to your division. I haven't seen any really big activity. Minnesota beefing up their defense a little bit, getting Tomlinson, which I think was a good deal for him. They also signed Patrick Peterson to a one-year $10 million deal. I have to admit, he's not the same guy that he was a couple of years ago, but he's still a veteran presence to that secondary. Do you see any concern with that for Chicago, or do you see anyone else in the division making any big moves that could push the Bears into a bit of a corner?
Well, I think the Packers signing Aaron Jones to that max contract, good. Yes, he is.
I forgot about that. You're right.
You know, he's one of the top running backs in the league. Teams should know by now, you can't pay running backs these big numbers. You can't. You know, and it's sad to say, but running backs are just, they're replaceable. You can almost draft one every year and bound to hit on one. You know, even like our guy Montgomery, third round pick, and he, I think if he actually gets a good line, could be one of the better running backs in this league. So, had the Packers just spend all their money on Aaron Jones, and they lost out. So they lost Brian Bulaga last year. They lost Corey Linsley this year. So now you're going to have to retool that line a little bit. Now, granted, the Packers line does block pretty well usually for Rodgers. And plus, Rodgers can evade, but he's getting older, so he can't evade as well. And obviously, I'm a little nervous. I don't know what their plan is for another receiver. I know Funchess is coming back. He opted out last year. So, and I know certain guys took restructure, like Za'Darius Smith to stay. I think Preston Smith, because they were saying that he might get cut, but I think he's staying. So, the Packers, knock on wood, haven't made a move that's, I'm like, oh, great, that's it, they're winning the Super Bowl. But they still have time to do so. The Lions obviously have made a lot of moves this offseason. Traded away Stafford for Goff and got a few, you know, first-round picks. And then they got Jamal Williams as a backup running back, which I just don't really make sense to me because they already have Kerryon and DeAndre Swift. And then
Swift's a baller.
Yeah, no, he is. And, like, they used him, you know, second-round pick last year, so I don't know why they signed Jamal Williams. Didn't make sense to me, but whatever. And then they got Michael Brocker. So they made some moves, but I don't think it would really make them legitimate contenders and make the Bears, you know, scared. And then the Vikings, that Dalvin Thompson move I did not like because he is scary. He is he's a very good D lineman, as you know, Castle. I was hoping, especially for that contract, out of all teams to sign him, of course, it was Minnesota. I wish the Giants re-signed him for your sake. But
very shocking when the deal went down.
Yeah, and I was expecting to see quite a decent number, and it was not. I mean, $11 million per year, not bad at all. So, and then Patrick Peterson, like you said, his play has definitely gone downhill. He's not that elite corner he used to be, but he's still good, and he's going to be that great veteran presence that young corner, you know, DB room needs. So, I don't know. I don't think anyone in the NFC North yet has made one move that I'm like, great, that's not good for the Bears. And I'm still waiting for the Bears to make a move where I'm like, all right, I like that. And as of now, I've not. They just re-signed a few guys, and that's about it. So, it's been a little slow in the NFC North, I'm not going to lie. Hopefully, for the other teams, it stays that way. But I'm hoping the Bears, they don't spend stupid money like they did last year, giving Robert Quinn $70 million, which I think is why they're taking it a little slow this year, because they want to make sure they get it right and not just give up all this money away and then it doesn't work out. So I'm hoping it works out, and I'm hoping, you know, for your case, Galladay maybe reaches an agreement with the Giants, so he's out of Detroit.
Or Jets. I mean, I know he's washed, but I'm really surprised that the Bears didn't try to pursue Pat Peterson. Like, he's a good veteran to bring to the locker room. So,
I mean, we have, you know, Kyle Fuller already veteran.
You cut Buster Skrine. I mean, I'm happy for you guys.
Oh, yeah. But Buster Skrine was more of that slot corner, you know. We have the two outside guys.
Jalen Johnson could probably be that, though.
Yeah, but he's pretty, you know. He was pretty locked up on the outside. And I think they want him to end up being the number one corner, take Kyle Fuller's spot. So we need a slot guy. And there's still a few good slot guys out there. And I'm hoping the Bears can reach an agreement. And there's a ton of linemen being traded and signed, which is I'm hoping the Bears can target one of those.
Speaking of linemen, we got to talk about Vegas for a second.
What is going on in Vegas?
Hudson getting traded to the Cardinals, who also got AJ Green.
Trent Brown to the Patriots. That's the one move that I was a little nervous about.
And then Gabe Jackson to Seattle.
Three of their best. They also got cut Incognito. So.
They're going to have to retool their entire offensive line. I don't know why they did it.
So here's my question.
They committed to Derek Carr.
I was just going to say, yeah, my question for you guys is, where do they stand with Derek Carr? Go ahead, Josh. You start.
So, yeah, sorry to cut you off about that. But
oh, no.
It just questions me. That's why I had to. Because I think we all could agree that we're speechless and confused about this. You commit to Derek Carr. Okay, great. I like Derek Carr. I know you are. You like him too, Castle. Got no problems with him.
He's a Fresno State guy. Gotta love him.
I don't know why, but
it's my dad's alma mater, that's why.
Huh, nice, good to know. I don't know that. But Rodney Hudson, who is known for not missing a snap, very durable, arguably a top two, top three center in this league, one of the best guys to play with in Madden. You trade him to the Cardinals. That was my favorite move for the Cardinals, on top, like, better than the J.J. Watt and the other moves that they made. You trade Gabe Jackson, who's a top offensive guard, to Seattle, like Steve just said. Cut an Incognito. I get that. He's getting up there in age. Trent Brown back to New England. Brown and Hudson are still very young. So I don't even know. I'm very confused about this. Are they planning on drafting O-line the entire draft? Like, I don't get it.
I don't either. And you have what is Josh Jacobs going to run behind now? Nothing?
That was exactly why he was so successful. Trent Brown is like 6'8", 360. Run behind him. Gabe Jackson's is a very good guard. Hudson's, like I said, one of the best centers. So, Josh Jacobs, I'm sorry for you, buddy.
And even like the Trent Brown trade, he's like one of the like better tackles. And what did they get? A seventh round pick, a fifth round pick or something like that? A fifth and a seventh? Like basically
they got
nothing?
They got nothing for all these trades. They got like a seventh and a sixth and a fifth rounder, basically. It's like the Detroit Pistons trading all their stars. Put it in basketball terms for you basketball heads.
But yeah, listen, if you trade one of them, all right. But all three of them to retool your whole line when it's not like you have a rookie quarterback, rookie receivers, rookie running backs. Like you have Henry Ruggs is still pretty young. Josh Jacobs now, yes, he's still young, but he's solidified himself as a star running back. And then Carr has proven to be elite quarterback, but he's a solid starter that a lot of teams would want to have on their team. So yeah, I don't get the reasoning behind it. I didn't think it was with cap space situation or, result of not having enough money. So they might try to sign some average guys from free agency to cheap contract and maybe draft some guy. I mean, this is a pretty good lineman class in the draft, so maybe they want to draft. Who knows? But it was a little crazy what they did.
You got to assume that there's something behind this, that Coach Gruden has got some master plan that we don't know about. But it's crazy. And I think out of all the linemen that got dealt, Hudson going to the Cardinals, man, with their receiving core now, with what we're continuing to see from Kyler. I mean, Cliff Kingsbury, man, he could be in a very, very good position. And it's very, very early, obviously. We still got a lot more free agency to go, and you guys can disagree, but I really like Arizona to go all the way.
I have them as the favorites in their division.
Yeah, I mean, listen, A.J. Green, I like A.J. Green. I've always liked him. Great come-up story. Seems like a solid guy, but he's battled with a lot of injuries. If he can stay healthy and he can really if he can develop good chemistry with this offense, he's a huge piece for them.
And a thing with A.J. Green, he doesn't have to be the number one guy anymore like he had to be in Cincinnati. That's Hopkins' role. He almost doesn't even have to be the number two guy because Christian Kirk has almost become that. And then Fitzgerald comes back. Like, he doesn't have to force a lot of pressure on himself to, like, I got to, do everything. Like, he can take a step back. And I think this is why he signed with Arizona, because between Kyler's athleticism and Kyler doing all the stuff with his legs, and then having a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, I think this was a great fit. And I hope he does stay healthy, because when he is healthy, he's older, but he was one of the league's most fun and tough receivers to cover during his prime.
Absolutely. And we got to see how things continue to play out. So far, this free agency has been very exciting. Again, Giants, you're meeting with Kenny Golladay today. Please, please, please work something out. Chicago, I mean, Chicago's got their top priority is you sign Allen Robinson. You have the franchise tag. Now you sign him. I want to see him stay with Chicago.
Thank you, Castle. Of course.
I know what it's like to have a player like that and to lose him. It's not fun for any team. So we got to hope for that. And for the Jets, the one thing I'll say about the Jets is be smart with the Darnold trade. I'm fine with them trading Darnold. I like Zach Wilson a lot. So if you're going to go for Zach Wilson, just be smart with the Darnold trade. So we'll see. We're going to continue following everything free agency. We got March Madness coming up very soon. These next episodes are going to be great. I'm really looking forward to continue doing this with you boys. Before we end the show, as always, we want to give a shout out to our social media guy, Matt Angler. He does a great job with blowing up your feed with all the latest news in sports, baseball, basketball, football, whatever you need it. You got it at the 3P podcast. And of course, we also want to give a shout out to our partner, Wild Chat Sports. They're doing a great job. Go check out their social media. They got a lot of great interviews. Like I said, we're going to continue to pump out the content. Season 3 is going to end on a very good note. We got some good interviews coming up. So all you guys need to do is just stay tuned. Thank you, and we will join you next time.